John Allen presents the Creepy Crawl Podcast. Hey creeps, welcome back to the Creepy Crawl Podcast. I am your host once again for this carnival of sadness, madness, and overall radness, John Allen. I'm joined as always by my imaginary co-host Woodrow. Woodrow is my hetero life mate. Woodrow and I have been happily married in this podcast for 4 months. 4 months of happy marriage. Yeah, but unfortunately, we've been married for 10 years. Bada bing, hashtag Rodney Dangerfield. As always, tremendous shout out, shouting from the hills to all who have been helping the show. I want to mention a couple who have helped out even above and beyond recently. That would be Miss Kathy Fiorelli, Miss Camilla Roger, and Miss Taryn, it's spelled Sugar. But I think sugar sounds cooler because you don't pour some sugar on someone, you pour some sugar on them. So Taryn Sugar. If you would like to be like these amazing people, you can do so by, how can we do this? Well, you know what? You can go to patreon.com/creepycrawl. You can also do a one shot on Venmo at Jonathan-Allen-154. As always, I implore you to follow me on the Twitter. That handle is at writer John Allen, no H. And lastly, I recently have created a Facebook group. You can go to facebook.com/groups/ The Creepy Crawl Podcast. Now that that's out of the way, research for today's episode occurred on April 20th. That's right, 420. And on this day in history in 1973, mass murderer Ed Kemper attempted to, casually, dispose of his mother's vocal cords in a domestic waste disposal unit. Creeps, I don't know how else to word it. So saying favorite seems crass, but you know what I mean as true crime fans. Edmund Kemper is by far my favorite serial killer, with his intelligence and honesty and self-reflection. Nonetheless, evil dude, but he's the one that, maybe not favorite, maybe intrigues me the most. He honestly seems like a nice guy. Isn't that so crazy? The fake pretend intro, can't afford the rights music for today's episode, we're gonna ignore the stuff that I record off the radio and play, is Shooting Star by Bad Company. The lyrics remind me a lot of today's subject, Rebecca Schaefer, a rising star cut down far, 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 far too young by death's wretched stench, John Robert Bardo. Like most guys my age, we all crushed on the My Sister Sam starlet. I remember her murder vividly. My Aunt Terry used to love to read the National Enquirer. She would save them, and I would read the throwaways, piles upon piles worth, where this tragic case was exploited. National Enquirer was actually sort of like TMZ and all that before its time. It often gets construed or misconstrued with those other shopping aisle impulse buys like Elvis is alive, or there's, you know, a dog person in the White House. But the National Enquirer, when you look back, I saw a study on this, as far as the celebrity stuff, because they didn't cover like fake moon landings and all that, they were actually very accurate. So I was a culture vulture way back when. Though senseless and disgusting, Rebecca Schaefer's death would go on to save the lives of many others, so again, we try to find a silver lining with these things. But it was a disgusting, brutal, and senseless murder, so for the sake of that, let's dip back in time to the 80s, when Hollywood was still wide open. Spray some Aquanet, get those bangs sky high, baby, and creepy crawl with me. Rebecca Lucille Schaefer was born in Eugene, Oregon. She was the only child of Dana, who was a writer and instructor at Portland Community College, and Dr. Benson Schaefer, who was a child psychologist. She was raised in the Jewish faith in Portland, where she attended Lincoln High School. The family was very, very close, very tight-knit, and Rebecca Schaefer said of them once in an interview, quote, "No matter where we are in the world, we are like a three-legged stool." So you already get a sense of what a sweet girl she is, was, great tight family bond, that sort of thing. Initially, she had aspirations to become a rabbi, which honestly, creeps, I didn't know women could become rabbis. I didn't know. I know a lot of religions are sort of, stodgy, were kind of, you know, not open to women in power, but I learned that now, so now I know. But she became a model instead. She began modeling during her junior year in high school. When she was only 14, Rebecca Schaefer was referred to talent agency Troutman Profiles, Inc. by her hairdresser, Rick Putro. So she's 14, she has her own hairdresser. She had to know she was hot back then. How could you not? It wasn't long before she was featured in department store catalogs, modeling outfits for the back-to-school season. I'm telling you, creeps, these episodes are so synchronized. I mentioned in an earlier episode about a girl I had a crush on back in the 80s. Her name was Sarah Howard, and she used to do the same kind of modeling. It was localized. It would be like in the JCPenney Sears catalog for back to school. We would just go in there and circle what we want and then just go to the store and buy it. But Sarah Howard was one of those models featured throughout. She was much older than I was. I was a kid. I'm pretty sure I cut the pictures out and put it in my wallet as a like 8 or 9 year old and told everybody that was my girlfriend and that was a picture of her because that's believable. Schaefer took to modeling and was quite determined to progress. Again, the ambitions she once had of becoming a rabbi were now behind her. She was known for having this effervescent, fresh face that beamed on print and appeared in department store catalogs and later television commercials, as well as extra roles in TV films. In August of 1984, at the age of 16, Rebecca Schaefer finished an internship in New York City. The city was this great fit for her because she loved that fast-paced life and endless opportunities that the Big Apple had to offer. I can relate. Every time I go to Manhattan, you could just wake up from a hangover, be dead to the world, and the second that you step on the streets, the energy just... It's like getting a shot of... what do they call those things? I don't know. There's some kind of IV you can put in your vein and not have a hangover. But yeah, that's what New York City has always been like. Instead of returning to Portland to complete her high school education, why bother at this point? Schaefer decided to call New York City home. She would go on to attend the professional children's school while looking for modeling and acting jobs. Not very long after moving there, Rebecca Schaefer landed the role of Annie Barnes in the soap opera One Life to Live. Once upon a time, soap operas, creeps, were basically the minor leagues of acting, a daily expose and audition. if you were to do a precursory glance, the number of A-list stars that come from soap operas is quite astounding. I could name a billion, but who wants to hear that? During this time, she attempted to further her modeling prospects. At 5'7", she was considered too short for high fashion modeling and struggled to find work. In 1985, that's stupid, by the way. Rewind. 5'7"'s too short? What the hell? Not everyone is Wonder Woman. Not everyone is a Glamazon. It doesn't make sense. She looks fine to me. She looked beautiful in the picture I have posted, as you'll see. In 1985, she moved to Japan in hopes of finding more modeling jobs, but still encountered difficulty due to her height and weight. Okay, again, you'll see on my Twitter the photo, creeps. She had zero weight issues. Like, God, I wish I had her weight issues. Fuck the chubtastic assholes and assholettes who judge these young girls like this. The fashion industry is more disappointing to me than, I don't know, an unsalted pretzel. Rebecca Wisely returned to New York City from Japan, where I'm confused about the height thing because certain cultures are known for certain things, and I believe as a culture, the Japanese people are generally shorter than like European counterparts, that sort of thing. So I guess being 5'7", you are banned from modeling worldwide, which is really, really stupid. She made the right choice, though. She returned to New York City, decided to focus on her acting career, and in 1986, Rebecca Schaefer wins a small role in Woody Allen's wonderful comedy, Radio Days. But alas, her performance was ultimately edited from the film. That happens all the time. It's got to be so heartbreaking. She only had a brief scene featuring her character. That's all that remains in the film. It didn't exactly bankrupt her, though. It got her on the radar. She continued modeling and, of course, also worked as a waitress, waiting tables as a starving artist. Been there, am there, will always be there. She appeared on the cover, eventually, of 17 magazine, which is a huge magazine, but if you go back to the 80s, it has this cult-like following. This caught the attention of television producers. Acting jobs were suddenly steady for Rebecca Schaefer, and it wasn't long before the now 18-year-old landed her biggest part yet. And that is going to be a leading role in the CBS sitcom, My Sister Sam. Some of you, if you're old like me, you might remember the show. It was a cute little show. Sort of a different, I guess you would say, storyline. In the show, basically, charming 16-year-old Patty Russell, who is played by Rebecca Schaefer, goes to live with her sophisticated older sister, 29-year-old Sam Russell, who was played by Pam Dauber. Pam Russell's this successful photographer in San Francisco. Their parents die. Kid sis moves in with big sis. It was a classic, wholesome 80s sitcom. And it happened to be, quite very early on, a smashing hit. Rebecca Schaefer, however, she wasn't thrilled about moving to Los Angeles, given how much she enjoyed living in New York. In New York City, everything is nearby. In Los Angeles, it's pure driving. There's no sense of community, really. Maybe in small pockets and small neighborhoods, but LA is a clusterfuck. I can relate to her mindset as far as not wanting to be in Los Angeles, but of course, if you are going to be an actress, you gotta be there. You got to. However, she did fit right in on the set of My Sister Sam, where her fellow cast members and crew sort of became like her extended family. She was indeed everyone's little sister, both on the show and on the set. Rebecca Schaefer was beginning to get more of a feel for that celebrity lifestyle. That first season of My Sister Sam, which aired, it was October of 86, yeah. It, again, was a hit right from jump. Rebecca Schaefer soon became a fixture on the aforementioned 17 magazine. She became idolized by readers of 17 magazine and had sort of a cult following there. And she was featured on the cover of the March 1987 issue, I believe for the last time, because at some point you reach a certain level of stardom where such affairs become, I don't want to say beneath you, but you've graduated to the next level sort of thing. She also began to receive fan mail. This was something you could do back in the day. There were fan clubs and you would write in. Nowadays, you just like a celebrity's post on Insta, something like that, and you move on. But back in the day, it was much more personal. If you were lucky, you might get something written back to you. That happened to me. I wrote fan mail to CeCe DeVille, who was the guitar player for Poison, who, funny story, the first time I saw the cassette tape for Poison, I was like, wow, these four chicks are hot as hell. So that went well in elementary school the next day. And CeCe DeVille, they sent me a, well, I guess it was an autograph. They sent me a paper where I think they might have stamped an autograph onto it. And it was a form letter. And it was like, hey, blank space, and they just wrote, like, John, and they wrote J-O-H-N, which really pisses me off, and yeah, so that wasn't a real thing, but she, again, begins receiving fan mail. Rebecca Schaefer told Judy Crown, who was a hairstylist on the set of My Sister Sam, how excited she was about this, but it set off alarm bells in Judy Crown's mind. Of course, for Rebecca Schaefer being so young, getting that first dose of stardom, fan mail, it's got to be incredible. I mean, I still get letters or emails to this day from a couple of stories I wrote on the Morbid podcast, and I feel like a F-level celebrity, and I'm, you know, I'm nothing, but I can only imagine the feelings that she had. So Judy Crown, she hears this, alarm bells go off. She later recalled telling Rebecca Schaefer not to respond to fan mail or gifts that she received from fans, as people could be cray-cray. The near murder of the actress Teresa Saldana by this obsessed fan in her own home in 1982, it still lingered in Crown's mind. This was sort of a thing in Hollywood. People were not taking it lightly. One of their own was almost murdered. Crown told the Television Academy Foundation in an interview that Rebecca Schaefer was, quote, very beautiful, very sweet, a little bit naive. Again, look at her age, quite understandable. The show was surprisingly canceled halfway through its second season in April of 88 due to failing ratings. Probably wouldn't happen these days, but back then it was just a clusterfuck of shows, and if this doesn't work for like a week sort of thing, we're going to throw something in its place. It's amazing though, it started off so, so strong and then just sort of died off. After My Sister Sam, Rebecca Schaefer had supporting roles in scenes from The Class Struggle in Beverly Hills, which I believe that was a TV movie, The End of Innocence, and the television film Out of Time. She also served as a spokeswoman for the children's charity Thursday's Child. In summation, Rebecca Schaefer was a burst of sunshine. She was this up-and-coming starlet, beautiful girl, wonderful beaming personality, again, just a bright, beautiful ray of sunshine. Well, of course, there's the sunshine. Now, enter the darkness. Yes, and enter the darkness we shall. John Robert Bardo was the youngest of seven children. His mama was Japanese, and his father was a non-commissioned officer in the United States Air Force. The Bardo family moved frequently, and they eventually settled in Tucson, Arizona in 1983. John Robert Bardo had a troubled childhood. He was abused by one of his siblings and placed in foster care after he threatened to commit suicide. As a matter of fact, John Robert Bardot's family had a history of mental illness, and he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. It's sad, but again, not an excuse to murder. Just putting that out there. At the age of 15, he was institutionalized for a month to treat emotional problems. Because, you know, creeps, a month is definitely long enough to cure 15 years. God, these deaf psychiatrists. That profession, I just don't know. Doesn't seem very much rooted in common sense. Anywho, Bardo dropped out of Pueblo Magnet High School in the ninth grade and began working as a janitor at Jack in the Box. To burn this creep with old English slurs, he was a hobbledehoy, a ninnyhammer of Olympic caliber. If his brain was dynamite, there wouldn't be enough to blow his hat off. I'm not making fun of someone because of a mental illness. Hell, I've got one. But this douchebag knew better. In the 18 months prior to Rebecca Schaefer's murder, John Robert Bardo had been arrested 3 times on charges that included domestic violence and disorderly conduct. Where did you get a load of this chump, by the way, when you see his picture? You couldn't cast this better. This is straight from Central Casting. This is villain 101 type shit. What with the weird balding hair and the fucking hate glare. This guy is a trip. And he's, you know what, Woodrow, you hear me? There we go. I'm just gonna get that down there. Okay, creeps. John Robert Bardo has just made my list. Bardo's neighbors also said that he had displayed unexplained, disturbing, and threatening behavior towards them. Bardo fell hard for Rebecca Schaefer the first time he saw her on My Sister Sam. But I should tell you, this wasn't the first time Bardo had, quote, fallen in love with a fresh face on screen. And it's pretty fucking gross, y'all. Bardo initially stalked Madonna. If you do the timeline, it's between 84 and 86. It didn't get bigger than Madonna. It just simply didn't. Madonna was everywhere. She was everything. Did she turn into a bit of a kook? Yeah, she did. I mean, who else would make Drake vomit after she kisses him on stage, right? But at the time, every girl was dressing up like Madonna. They all were wearing the fishnet and the whole getup. Madonna was huge. Now, you would think Madonna's people reporting this stalking on top of Bardo's mental health history and his criminal record, maybe somebody could have stepped in. But no, as I said, it gets even grosser. Bardot had become obsessed with Samantha Smith, a 10, yeah, I said it, fucking 10-year-old American schoolgirl and peace activist. She was sort of like the original Greta, was it Thunberg, whatever her name is. Fucking 10. Ugh, gross. Bardot seemed to have a life dream to obnubulate anything that sparkled, it would seem. What's obnubulate, you wonder? Well, go get yourself your own word of the day calendar. This child, Samantha Smith, was known for writing a letter to Soviet leader Yuri Andropov, something like that, hoping to better understand the tense Soviet-U.S. relations. Again, this is smack dab in the middle of the Cold War. He actually replied, and this became sort of an international feel-good story. Some thought maybe, perhaps, the makings of an olive branch between the two nations. In a Russian newspaper, at Andropov's, whatever, Russian guy's request, Smith, the 10-year-old, even traveled to the Soviet Union where she met and spent time with locals. Meanwhile, the know-nothing-happening tampon tunnel John Robert Bardot traveled to Smith's home state of Maine to try and find her. Yes, he wanted to find this 10-year-old girl. WTF. What were his intentions? We'd never know, because tragically, Samantha Smith was killed in an airplane crash on August 25th of 1985. Typical story, small plane, that sort of thing. There's actually some conspiracy theories around it, given the whole Russia connection. Could be true. I don't know if I'll look into that for a further episode. There's not a lot of records at the time that really relate anything to this said conspiracy. And again, I have a soft spot. I don't want to exploit children, so who knows. But yes, she was tragically killed. It does make you wonder if this actually might have saved her in some way from whatever this treacherous leech Bardot had in plan or in mind. Bardot then focused his repulsive, obsessive behavior elsewhere and began to write letters to Rebecca Schaefer. You kind of get where this is going. He grew increasingly convinced that he was connecting with her on a personal level with each letter that he sent. He wrote that he was, quote, a sensitive guy, and that he related to Rebecca Schaefer's character in My Sister Sam. She's a fucking character, you dim bulb. What a collegiate level simpleton this insult to humanity is. Or was. He ain't dead, but he's locked up. Bardot knew nothing of Schaefer outside of her TV show. If I meet Steve Carell, I'm not going to fucking start making that's what she said jokes, because you know what? Michael Scott, beloved and funny as he is, although not as good as Dwight, is a fucking character. Not real. I can't imagine the mindset of someone who can't distinguish between the two. But when Rebecca Schaefer responded naively to one of Bardot's letters saying, quote, yours was one of the nicest I ever got, John Robert Bardot only felt more convinced that she was reciprocating his Looney Tunes feelings. Rebecca, she was just so young and nice and sweet and appreciative that she'd had fans in the first place, that she went above and beyond. It was just being naive and young. But of course, no good deed, right, Woodrow?
After Shitstain received the letter from Schaefer in the summer of 1987, rather than be happy with this, maybe frame the note, the response, maybe brag and find a friend and then tell them about it, that sort of thing, you know, like what us normies would do. Well, John Robert Bardot decides, I think I'll catch a flight to Burbank from Tucson. I'm assuming that being a janitor at the Jack in the Box paid good money back then. He arrives, and he makes his way to the Warner Brothers Studios lot, clutching a bouquet of flowers and a giant teddy bear. Do women really care about that shit? It's such a cliche, I feel like it's ingrained in us that we're supposed to think, this is what you give the gal, and the gal's gonna respond with glee, because, oh my god, who would do such a crazy nice thing? I feel like if I go on a date with a girl and I give her a gift certificate to Outback Steakhouse, maybe she'd be more appreciative than a fucking teddy bear and some flowers that are going to die in a week. Tangent end. He makes his way again to the Warner Brothers lot. Warner Brothers security chief Jack Egger remembered Bardot just begging to be let in, saying, quote, I gotta see her. I love her. If I could just see her for a minute. Big red flags, right? The referee on the football field throwing red flags right and left? You'd think, but no. This Egger character instead feels bad for Bardot and saw the incel as nothing more than a lovesick teen and offered Bardot a ride back to the hotel where he was staying. Bardot accepted. Again, I've got my list of people to punch. Creeps, Jack Egger, you just made the goddamn list. This fucking lunatic. First of all, I don't believe this security chief thought that he was a teen, because you look at his pictures, he looks like a 49-year-old pervert. And the things that Bardot said, trying to gain entry, you think that's just puppy love? You are a bad person. No, not a bad person. Maybe not a bad person. But you know what, security chief? You're a bad security guy. Bad security guy. You're not quite a hell person, but you are... Security? No. Not your forte. You should go work... Maybe you should be a janitor at the Jack in the Box. John Robert Bardot and his crazy eyes and Egger talked during the car ride, and Egger finally picks up a little bit that, hey, this guy is fucking nuts. And he tells Bardot, it's going to be best if you just go back home to Arizona. But not before giving Bardot the hope that he needed that reaching Rebecca Schaefer would be achievable. Bardot agrees to this, but then he returned a month later with a knife. This time he was prevented from entering the studio. No fucking cops were brought in to arrest him. Is a background check that hard? I rent from apartments. They do the background check in 4 minutes. I think the last place I rented, I put on a game of Best Fiends, and I got halfway through one level before they said, okay, background check's coming. You're clean. Credit's not so great. Kind of wondering about this incident behind the Waffle House in Ocala, Florida, back in 84. But other than that, you're clean. But no. So, remember, My Sister Sam was canceled, and that's who Bardot thought Rebecca Schaefer was, the character Sam. I mentioned she went on after My Sister Sam to do a couple films, a couple TV movies. Well, Bardot sees one of them. He sees the movie Scenes from the Class Struggle in Beverly Hills, which was released on June 3rd of 89. In fact, no one was more anxious to see it than Bardot. But as the movie ended, the unhealthy obsession and admiration and affection he felt for Rebecca Schaefer when watching My Sister Sam had instantly vanished and was replaced by disgust and jealousy. Because you see, folks, creeps, Rebecca Schaefer, she wasn't playing fucking Sam in this movie, because actors don't play the same character all of their life. Nope, she was in a scene where her character was in bed with one of her male co-stars. This broke Bardot emotionally. Too bad it did not break his fucking neck. Bardot made his way to the Anthony Agency. This is a Tucson PI firm with a photo of Rebecca Schaefer. He told the PI that Schaefer was an old friend of his and that they had spoken often in the past, but he needed her current address so that he could send her a gift. Can we get a murder referee that just pops up from nowhere and throws red flags? Is that too much to ask for? It seems like a simple undertaking. Although they've been working on I-75 for the last 37 years, so yeah. This PI went ahead and took the money instead of questioning and reporting this idiot to the police. So, private investigator at the Anthony Agency in Tucson, Arizona, which I do not recommend, 1 star on Yelp because I can't do 0. You too, motherfucker, have just made the list. You know, I'm listening to the playback, because I always like to make sure everything's smooth sailing. I guess I've been referring to Douchebag as John Robert Bardot, but I think it's Robert John Bardot. I'm not going to change anything, because he doesn't deserve that recognition. So, fuck that guy. But, yeah, if you're like me and you're into the whole details, OCD, and not calling people the wrong name, you might notice that, but I'm not going to change anything else because fuck this guy. That's all. Kisses. I gotta go pee now. Creeps, I gotta tell you, there's this hobby that Bardot has, and he draws photo or pictures of the women that he stalks and obsesses over. And to this day, this fucking heaping spoonful of ass stew still draws pictures of Rebecca Schaefer. But the catch is, he ain't no genius. He is fucking terrible. It's like, if it was on Impractical Jokers, it would be a punishment where Murr or Sal or one of those guys would have to draw someone, and this is what it would look like. I'm going to post it in the group as well as Twitter, so be sure to check it out. But, yeah. So, finding Rebecca Schaefer's home address proved to be quite easy. In fact, too easy. John Robert Bardot paid $300 to this douchebag PI, and they got in touch with the California DMV. The DMV, in turn, provided the PI with Rebecca Schaefer's home address. What in the French fried fuck? This was all perfectly legal. Given driver's license information was public at the time, you could do this. It was a stalker's paradise. John Robert Bardot tried to buy a gun, too, but the owner of the shop wisely refused to sell one to him when he found out about Bardot's criminal and mental illness history. Bardot then asked his brother Edward to buy one for him, and Edward agreed as long as his brother promised only to use it when they were together for target practice. Oh, Edward, you simple fuck. That reminds me of the time my dad gave me a credit card and said use in case of emergency. Well, you know what? Natty light at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday is an emergency. It's a bad idea. So, now he has a gun. He's supposed to use it only when he's together with his brother, Edward, for target practice, which, of course, would never happen. Shortly before Bardo boarded a Greyhound bus headed to L.A., why couldn't he have taken the bus to Siberia? John Robert Bardo, I don't know. I'm getting off my train of thought. You bring joy to many when your silhouette gets smaller and smaller by the footstep. Where was I? Bardo wrote a letter to his older sister in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is where the Riley Gall Emma Walker case happened like 3 episodes ago. So much synchronicity, creeps. I'm telling you, I'm not planning it. It's just happening. Magical things are happening, and you all are the OG originals along for the ride. In this letter to his sister, Bardo wrote the following: I have an obsession with the unattainable. I have to eliminate what I cannot attain. Okay, seriously, can we stop ignoring these manifestos, people? Just stop ignoring them. In no sense or iota of logic are they ever harmless. Ever. Just stop ignoring them. Someone says they're going to do something, pay attention. Take it serious. He did not mention Rebecca Schaefer by name, though, so the sister could not really do anything as well as, or as far as tipping off the cops, that sort of thing. Again, mentally ill or not, what do you say, Woodrow? FTG? I say FTG. Fuck this guy. Bardo, your insecurities that drove you to kill are nullified. I get it. You hate yourself. You don't like yourself. You don't like the way you look. Blah, blah, blah. I know you're as ugly enough to sour milk. But, you know, you just don't let it get to you. You don't kill people. Don't let your ugliness have you kill people. Honestly, your face is just fine. What we have to put a bag over is your personality. Rebecca Schaefer, on the day in question, on this fateful morning of July 18th of 89, she is in West Hollywood, she is in her apartment, and she is pacing. Why, creeps, you ask? Well, she is on the precipice of stardom. She is about to catch her big fucking break. She was awaiting the delivery of the script for The Godfather 3, which she would be reading the very next day before iconic Academy Award-winning director Francis fucking Ford fucking Coppola. Schaefer was auditioning for the part of Mary Corleone, Michael Corleone's daughter. This is a role that would surely have changed her career. This was like winning the actor lottery. Now, sure, we know The Godfather 3 is the weakest of the trilogy, but still, it's the fucking Godfather. If you have Star Wars 19, I'm going to roll my eyes, and then I'm going to go pay my money to see the damn thing. The Godfather. Had she nailed this role, which I've read she probably would have, we'd be talking about Rebecca Schaefer to this day in terms of Academy Awards. So, ding dong, the doorbell rings, and Schaefer rushes downstairs, but unfortunately, she is not greeted by the courier with the script, which is how they do things in Hollywood. No, the man on her doorstep was carrying a bag containing a copy of The Catcher in the Rye. Fucking synchronicity. Check out my episode on Catcher. Again, this podcast, pure synchronicity. Along with Catcher, there was an autographed photo of Rebecca Schaefer and a card he had received from her in response to a letter he had written. This is the famous reply Rebecca sent to him that read, "Yours was one of the nicest I ever got." Rebecca Schaefer opens the door, gives that trademark sweet smile, and told him, after a little bit of chit-chat and kindness, she needed to get ready for an appointment. She was very sincere and genuine. She said to Bardot, quote, "Please take care," shook his hand, and closed the door. Can you imagine this day and age being a celebrity and answering your own door? Not these days. Robert John Bardot had traveled 500 miles from Tucson to West Hollywood to finally meet or do something else to Rebecca Schaefer. After the short interaction on the doorstep, Bardot walked to a diner and calmly ate breakfast. I wish he would have choked on his breakfast. He realized he had forgotten about the CD and letter he brought for Schaefer, so he returned to her apartment. Yep, he made her a fucking mixtape. I do question the CD part from my research, because I feel in 89 we were still rocking the cassette tapes. Am I wrong on this? I don't know. Have I been wrong before? Nope. This time, Rebecca Schaefer was impatient because she is waiting for the golden ticket to arrive. And again, she's met with this strange-looking, creepy man. And you can only be kind for so long. So, as she answers the door this time and begins talking with Bardot, she is impatient and visibly annoyed. And according to Bardot, she said, quote, "Hurry up, I don't have much time." Well, that's not that cruel of a thing to say. Again, hospitality breaks at some point. Try working in a bar or a restaurant. You'll find that shit real quickly. The dull thud of intellect that was John Robert Bardot just didn't get it. Light travels faster than sound, which is why he seemed bright until he spoke. Whether it's toxic masculinity or whether it is this desire to control what he can't have, this mental illness, doesn't matter. Bardot replies to what he perceives as a slight, "I forgot to give you something." He then proceeds to pull out a .357 Magnum, and he shoots Rebecca Schaefer in the chest in the doorway of her own home. All she can do is scream, "Why? Why?" Bardot turned and ran. He left Schaefer bleeding on her doorstep. Upon hearing the gunshot and the screaming, a neighbor called 911, but alas, it was in vain. Rebecca Schaefer died shortly after arriving to the hospital. The act of having a nice visit with your idol, returning to kill said idol while holding a copy of Catcher, is verbatim how Chapman killed John Lennon. Again, synchronicity. Go back to episode 1 if you dare suffer through that monstrosity. And the whole thing is eerie. She was shot for being too kind. All she fucking did was open her front door. Well, creeps, I think it's high time for the Woodrow Comedy Minute that lasts longer than 60 seconds. Woodsy, we need some levity today, I think, with such a sad and heavy case. So, let's tell the people, let's tell the creeple, what have you got for us today? What's the topic? Are you kidding me? You're still mad about me saying you made up a fake girlfriend from fucking 2 episodes ago? Ugh, fine. You dated Trisha, and she went to another school. Enough already, bro. Your anger is so random. It's random like the time we snuck into Graceland and had a feather tickle fight in the cushion fort we built in the bathtub. Just... Sam, hang over the jokes. So unprofessional. Alright, thank you, Romeo. Okay, creeps, lighthearted jokes, a palate cleanser, if I can steal that from the gals at Morbid. Joke number one, lighthearted, from Woodrow. What do you call your mother's sister who fights crime? A vigilante. Okay, cute. PG. Family friendly. Joke number two, creeples. What did the left eye say to the right eye?
Between us, something smells.
Alright, well, very, very clean, Woodsy. I'm sort of proud of you. Maybe Disney will sponsor us one day. Okay, creeps, final joke. Lighthearted style from Woodrow. Here we go. What do you get when you jingle Santa's balls? A white Christmas. Okay, I knew the other shoe would drop. And there goes our Disney sponsorship. Just disintegrating like all the superheroes and the Avengers. Thank you for that, Woodrow. Well, that's our Woodrow Creeps. Back to the show. The following day after the murder, John Robert Bardot was located in Tucson, his hometown, attempting to kill himself by running in and out of traffic. He was yelling like a damned snollygosta, to utilize more old-timey English, a deranged cockalorum, that he had killed Rebecca Schaefer. Yep, he's running around admitting this, running in front of cars. Bullshit, he wasn't trying to kill himself. It's pretty easy to run into the road, into traffic, and get hit by a car. You don't have to try very hard. It's the one time I wish someone was texting and driving and won the game of Frogger against his stupid ass. Damn you, 1989 technology. Oh, the cops in Tucson, they arrested John Robert Bardot. He was held on a $1 million bail. The LAPD was notified and informed that they were holding Robert John Bardot. And faxed his photo over. That's how long ago this was. They faxed it over. Have you ever called a fax machine? A lot of the younger people here probably haven't. But if you've ever called a fax machine, wow. Talk about ear pollution. The LAPD showed the photo of douchebag Bardot, who I believe to be a hell person. They showed this photo to witnesses who would come forward saying that they had been approached by a man asking where Rebecca Schaefer lived the very same morning that she was murdered. Witnesses confirmed it was the same freaky-looking man in the photo. Of course, discarded just blocks from Schaefer's apartment, the LAPD found his piss-yellow shirt, a gun holster, and, of course, a copy of The Catcher in the Rye. Maybe he thought Rebecca Schaefer was phony. So, Bardot's public defender, one Stephen Galindo, argued that Robert John Bardot. I keep mixing those two up. Doesn't matter. He's a douchebag. We'll just call him Bardot. They argued that Bardot was incapable of planning the murder due to mental illness. He was able to get the bus ticket, the plane ticket, PI, all that. I'd say he's capable. Bardot's brother, Edward, added in court that his brother had spent time in a psychiatric hospital when he was younger. BFD, big fucking deal. While in jail awaiting trial, Dr. Park Dietz, that's a forensic psychiatrist that you've probably all seen on all of the crime shows, like forever. You know that name, Park Dietz. This psychiatrist, forensic psychiatrist, interviewed Bardo, and the young assassin, shooter, idiot, told Dr. Dietz, quote, "There was something very special about Rebecca, and I just couldn't let go of her." He still can't. Wow, you've got to see this drawing that this moron did from prison of Rebecca. It's on my all the social places. Holy crap. Not talented. No, not at all. So, Bardo explained that he identified with Mark David Chapman, John Lennon's killer, Catcher in the Rye. Creeped, you get it. I already mentioned all the similarities. Bardo told Dr. Dietz that the song Exit by U2 gave him the idea to kill Schaefer. Which is funny because any song by U2 gives me the idea to kill myself. During the trial, Bardo's public defender, Stephen Galindo, played the song. Bardo was hypnotized, supposedly, by the music, goes into this trance, sings along, taps his feet, bobs his head to the beat. Total shit show, fake bullshit, in my opinion. Dietz testified, finally, that though Bardo was a schizophrenic since childhood, he was not legally insane. Prosecuting Bardo's trial was Marcia Clark, who of course would later prosecute O.J. Simpson. Clark argued that Robert John Bardo could not be simply insane, given that he had stalked Schaefer for 2 years before going on to murder her. He had also stalked Madonna and a fucking 10-year-old. Judge Dino Falgione, the hell? Dino Falgoni, Fulgoni, some Italian judge, sided with the prosecution, obviously. On October 29th of 1991, Robert John Bardo was convicted of first-degree murder. But of course, he was subsequently sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Robert John Bardo is currently incarcerated at Avenal State Prison in California. In prison, he spends much of his time, as I mentioned, drawing very poorly celebrities. A number of his drawings are available for purchase online, kind of part of that, what do they call that term with like the murder apparel type shopping market, whatever. But again, they are like really, really, really bad. I will post one. Really bad. He's a hell person. Rebecca Schaefer's murder, it did sort of act as a blueprint for the media's coverage of crime, for better or for worse, mostly for worse. Patrick Healy, a journalist at NBC Los Angeles who covered the case, recalls that the Bardo trial was among the first cases to attract the attention of a, quote, new breed of, I say, nightly trash tabloid TV magazine shows, like A Current Affair and Hard Copy. This is way before TMZ. TMZ actually has nothing on that. I mean, nowadays celebrities pine to get on TMZ. It's sort of an image booster type bullshit. But Hard Copy, Current Affair, it was like the National Enquirer came off of print, went on to television, and got really fucking aggressive. So it's about around this time that you're going to see Amy Fisher and Joey Buttafuoco, you know, the Menendez brothers, all of this stuff. sort of an entree into the modern true crime movement as we know it. This sort of aggressive journalism, it would lead to more paparazzi, never mind what's going on already in the celebrity's life that they're trying to cover. It would lead to paparazzi trying to create their own stories because these trash outlets did pay a lot of money. So, for example, maybe Princess Diana would still be alive today if it wasn't for the advent of trash TV such as Hard Copy or Current Affair, even early Inside Edition, that sort of thing. Quote, the Bardot trial became a trial run, so to speak, for the synthesis of justice and celebrity, and foreshadowed what was to come with later high-profile trials of music producer Phil Spector and actor Robert Blake, Haley said. But I'll tell you, creeps, Rebecca Schaefer, this is not her legacy. We won't let it be. In honor of Rebecca Schaefer, the cast of My Sister Sam gathered together to make a PSA, this is after the show is off the air, about preventing handgun violence. Pam Dauber, who played the older sister in the show, she even testified before Congress on the issue of implementing common sense gun laws. So if anything positive did come out of Rebecca Schaefer's death, it was the anti-stalking movement which led to several changes in the law. For example, in 1990, California passed the first anti-stalking law in the country and officially labeled stalking a crime. Slow golf clap, California. There was also a strong push from SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, to protect personal information held by the DMV. Essentially, at this time, creeps, anybody that wanted to stalk a celebrity, find out where they live, that sort of thing, could just fucking go to the DMV and do it. We worry about invasions of privacy with Google and all that stuff now, but back then, it was tangible. This shit was in your hands if you wanted it to be. California was the first state to restrict access to the private information, not just of celebrities, but anybody. So a lot of people that would have been stalked and killed, nah, not gonna happen. And that was one of the positive offshoots of the Rebecca Schaefer murder. In 1994, the Driver's Privacy Protection Act was passed by Congress, which required every state to do the same. Rebecca Schaefer, she was buried at Ahavai Shalom Cemetery in Portland, Oregon. Again, if there is a legacy of Rebecca Schaefer going on 30 years plus, it's that stars and public figures and regular folks as well are better protected. This is a noble cause that she unfortunately had to die for. I truly believe she would have been a movie star. She was gorgeous. You can see the picture. You can see that effervescence, that fresh face. She was going to be in The Godfather. We know Rebecca Schaefer through this, but we would have known Rebecca Schaefer had this not happened. But she did think, I would say, she saved a lot of lives. Her murder did. Access, you know, it isn't quite so simple these days. Again, like I said, it's terrible. There's no way to sugarcoat that she lost her life. But many, many were saved in the process. Quote, it was a wake-up call. I think the general public was shocked that a young girl would be killed by a lunatic, said veteran Hollywood reporter David Robb. Quote, people realize if a young star could be murdered, anybody could be murdered. So, this was sort of the case, creeps, that brought stalking into the mainframe. It didn't eliminate it completely. I mean, there was definitely cases. I mean, George Harrison, the Beatle, somebody scaled these gigantic walls in England and nearly stabbed him to death. The list goes on and on. Lots and lots of cases. But it would have been a lot worse had Rebecca Schaefer not changed the landscape. But again, the tragedy, it's just too much to bear. Rebecca Schaefer, she was kind. She was a sweet, budding star. She had a smile you'll never forget. And she was only 21. 20 fucking one. Well, creeps, that's it for this episode. I really do hate these tales where some nothing-happening motherfucker, some troglodyte dick sweater like Robert John Bardot can wield such power. But with every act of cowardice by some loser like this comes legislation and reform that does save others. So, what do you think, Woodrow? One final FTG? Yeah, one final FTG for Robert John Bardot. Fuck that guy. And that is the last I will ever name him by name. Creeps, if you would like to be like these beautiful, sexy types that have been supporting the show, there are ways to do it. In fact, what do you think, Woodrow? Tell them now? I'm going to tell you now. You can go to patreon.com/creepycrawl. Or you can give me a one-shot hit, sink my battleship at Venmo. That is at Jonathan-Allen-154. As always, follow me on the Bluebird, the Twitter. That handle is at WriterJohnAllen, no H, where I post musings and photos that really tie the show together. But for some reason, I don't get a lot of reactions on Twitter like I do on Facebook. It's insanity. I don't get it. But I want those reactions on Facebook. You know how you can give those to me? You can go to facebook.com/groups/thecreepycrawlpodcast. Today's fake imaginary outro music will be another random Spotify shuffle. Woodrow, do the honors. Shuffle. Oh. American Girl by Tom Petty. I just got goosebumps and my nipples hardened slightly because that's what Rebecca Schaefer truly was. Wow. Again, what a fucking tragedy. But it did again have an outcome that helped others. That's why we keep doing these. Until next time, creeps, keep your loved ones close. Remember that too much caution is not a thing. And as always, Creepy Crawl on.